This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I don't have to talk entirely sports for 2 hours. I have to talk almost entirely sports for 2 hours a day.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports. I think you just heard twice in that rejoin. My name is Joshua Briscoe. We are here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, 1510.com. You can figure it out in the TuneIn app if you have a cell phone. We're on 4 to 6 every weekday. Not Thursday and Friday this week because of golf, but every other day. So I guess just 2 days ago and then yesterday and also today. But next week we're back a whole week and I'll be back over on 810 for Sports Sunday again. There are a lot of things going on in the NFL right now as the season gets closer. A couple of preseason games, I think, happening tonight. And there might not be a more interesting quarterback situation anywhere in the NFL right now than in Denver. The Denver Broncos are, as we talked about the last couple days, in a pretty bad place at this point. And I wanted to get a first-hand look at exactly how this drama is unfolding. So now we are joined by Benjamin Albright. He's at Albright NFL. He's a co-host on AM 1340 and 104.7 FM in Denver. He joined us whenever we're talking about all sorts of that Chiefs off-season drama earlier this year on Sports Sunday. This is the first time, though, Ben is now joining this show. I think this is also just like going to be that's going to be the case for everybody because this show just got born. So that makes sense. Ben, thank you for joining the show.
Absolutely.
So there is a lot of uncertainty in Denver that may only be matched by the certainty of the fact that the quarterback situation is going to be kind of a mess this year. I've been following your tweets and all of the reports out of Denver really closely, but for those of us who haven't been, in a nutshell, what is going on in Denver behind center?
Well, in a nutshell, they're both terrible.
Okay, slightly.
You know, I mean, if we want to break it down a little further,
yeah.
They've both been really bad. They Trevor Siemian is who he is, a tools limited guy who tries to play it safe all the time, and you guys in Kansas City be very familiar with that.
Yeah,
in Alex Smith, the difference is Trevor Siemian has less or fewer tools than Alex Smith, so he's a poor man Smith in that regard. Paxton Lynch has all the tools in the world; he just hadn't put it together yet, and we don't know that he ever will necessarily. So you've got one quarterback who's playing it safe and throwing 5-yard checkdowns on 3rd and 7, and then you've got another guy who's let it rip every chance he gets, and whether that turns into touchdown or interception.
What's the money going towards right now in Denver? What's the predicted outlook for how this eventually plays out between Lynch and Siemian as far as who ends up starting week one?
Well, if you listen to the local media, they'll tell you it's Trevor Siemian hands down, but that really hasn't been the case after watching these guys. They also tend to lead that Trevor Siemian will be starting the first preseason game. Mm-hmm. However, I was told that Trevor will be starting the first preseason game because it's at Chicago. Trevor went to college at Northwestern, and it's his hometown, so he's going to be playing in front of family. So I don't say that I would put any stock in this. It's bizarre around here because the media seems really in the tank for Trevor Siemian. I think a lot of these guys bashed Paxton last year. Paxton won't give him interviews, Trevor will. And so, these guys kind of have a rooting interest in the guy who will give them interviews rather than being objective about the actual quarterback battle.
Well, and I heard the sound from Vance Joseph a couple days ago whenever he was asked out at training camp, is Trevor Siemian getting the start in week one, any sort of indicator that he's getting a lead? And his response was, no, guys, no. Which doesn't sound like a head coach who's supremely confident in his quarterback, and I guess that makes sense. What are you sort of rooting for? Not as an observer, but what are you rooting for from the perspective of what is the logic here? What would you be doing if you were in Vance Joseph's unenviable shoes?
Well, I don't have a rooting interest.
Yeah,
but
just a logical interest.
Right. If I were the head coach, I would probably play Paxton Lynch. You traded up in the first round to get the guy last year. You already know what Trevor Siemian is, another season of mediocrity. The Broncos were a missed field goal in week one, a block extra point against the Saints, a torn hamstring on a pick six against the Colts, and a collapse against the Chiefs away from four additional losses last year, and they already didn't make the playoffs. So I think you look and see what you have with the kid with the tools. Throw him out there, see what you got. And if it doesn't work out, well, you know what you have in Siemian. You can always go back to that and draft somebody next year.
What was happening today with the A.J. McCarron rumors? I saw them show up, and then I saw you destroy them, and now I'm just sort of wondering what the atmosphere around that is.
I don't know what the atmosphere is, but I'll tell you they're totally false. The Denver Broncos did not call and inquire about A.J. McCarron. I did talk to a Bengals source who said about a half a dozen teams have called since the draft just to gauge what the price tag was. None of them have had serious discussions. None of them were the Denver Broncos.
Have the Broncos made any calls around the league?
Not that I'm aware of, and I've been emphatically told no. I always try to go the extra mile to confirm that, but sure. I haven't been, I can't confirm every team around the league with every phone call. So right. I would say that they say they haven't, and leave it at that.
Would it be worth, from your perspective, would it be worth the Broncos looking around the league to try to make this season a little more winnable and maybe even to look for someone else to develop for the future? Or is this just going to be the season where you would let Paxton Lynch show everyone what exactly he is or is not?
Yeah, you've already got the developmental guy. You drafted the guy last year who you knew was going to be a two-year project. You traded up for him in Paxton Lynch. Put him out there. Let him get the reps. Let him get in there and see what he's got. And if after a year you don't think he's the guy, so be it. You know, I remember a quarterback battle in Denver back in the 80s where, the big toolsy young quarterback and the smart, savvy guy who didn't have all the tools, went head-to-head. The smart, savvy guy looked better in practice, and the other guy went on to become John Elway. So I think that, you need to they need to have a bit of common sense to this. Mm-hmm. Put the guy out there, see what he can do, and if you can't get the job done, thank him kindly for trying and go back to what you already had.
I saw a tweet today with the extensive list of John Elway's first through third round draft picks of offensive players, and there's Paxton Lynch and then several others. Again, every offensive pick from round 1 through 3 in John Elway's tenure in Denver, and none of them are currently starting in the NFL unless you want to count Brock Osweiler as currently starting in the NFL. I know that John Elway just got a contract extension. What's the, I guess I'm going to use the word atmosphere again. What's the general feeling around John Elway's tenure in Denver right now?
Well, that he's a brilliant general manager who brought 2 Super Bowl appearances, 1 Super Bowl win, and was close to another Super Bowl appearance. He's a Raheem Moore lapse in coverage away from another Super Bowl appearance. And he's managed to assemble a world-class roster outside of the quarterback position. His drafts haven't been very good. His free agent signings have been. If you look at the undrafted free agents he's brought in, they've been pretty good. But, his actual physical drafts have not been that great. That has been a point of sports talk radio fodder here in Denver. But, as long as the guy keeps winning, who's anybody to argue with it?
Well, and the salary cap situation in Denver seems to be supreme constantly, so that's another element of it. But you say as long as they keep winning, what do you think this season looks like by way of winning?
I don't. I think this is going to be a make-or-break season in that regard. Mm. So Elway will be thankful that he signed the extension because he'll need another year or two to build back to where he wants to go. I see an 8-8 team here, especially if they start Trevor Siemian. If Paxton Lynch goes out there, maybe they win some more if the light comes on. But, as it stands right now, you got about a 500 team and you're playing a rough schedule.
What do you think about the reports that I have been putting out into the universe saying that this is God punishing the Broncos for their deal with the devil that got them Peyton Manning? Has that been confirmed anywhere?
God and I haven't been on speaking terms in a few years.
Dang it.
So maybe when we patch things up, I'll ask.
Please do, because I'm also having a really hard time getting through. But I feel like all of my sources indicate that's a logical development. Another thing that's going on in the NFL outside of Denver, because I know you have eyes on everything that's happening. Andrew Luck seems to be one of the kind of under-discussed, potentially huge stories. We don't really have any idea when he's going to be back in Indianapolis. Do you know anything about how that is all unraveling or unfolding?
That's something that I'm working on right now. I wish I could speak more to it. Unfortunately, I'm not double-sourced on a lot of that, so I don't really want to put things that are single-sourced or speculatory out there, but I will say there's more to the story than meets the eye.
And do you have any feeling for how long it's going to be before we start hearing what you know about that?
I don't want to comment on that just yet.
Fair enough. One other topic also that has gained my attention just because I guess I'm kind of enjoying the spectacle of it. Oh my God, the Jets are going to be terrible. Is that the worst?
When was the last time the Jets were terrible?
Well, at this point, this is a catastrophic looking roster right now, right? I mean, are they going to win? If I put the over under, asked Matt Verderam this yesterday. If I put the over under for the Jets this year, season victories at 1.5, what are you inclined to take?
The under. They're a tanking team. They're deliberately tanking.
Now, okay, so then with that in mind, because that they're clearly not a team trying to win right now, what happens to Todd Bowles? If they go 0-16 or 1-15, is he a guy that's just going to take a bullet at the end of the year and they're going to fully rebuild, or do they actually believe in Bowles enough to say, we're in for this regardless of the fact that we're not even trying to win this year?
Todd Bowles is only there as a stopgap coach. Well, they tank. Okay. They just didn't want to be paying two coaching staffs.
That makes sense. One other thing going on, the biggest story in the NFL these last couple of days, obviously Ryan Tannehill goes down with an injury. Jay Cutler is brought out of retirement. Do you know how seriously the Dolphins were weighing their options at that point between Cutler and Colin Kaepernick?
Well, I can tell you all about that. I actually broke that story. Jay Cutler was always priority number one. The Dolphins wrote out two lists of names. They were a list of free agents, guys they would not have to give up assets to go get, and a list of guys that they were willing to trade for. And so you've seen some of these names floating around that were quote-unquote discussed. Mm-hmm. Christian Ponder was not seriously discussed. He just happened to be on the free agent list name. Same with Tim Tebow. He was never seriously discussed. The name was just on the free agent name, and somebody was trying to connect dots because Gase was his quarterback coach in 2010-2011.
Right.
They did discuss the possibility of trading for Brock Osweiler. They did discuss the possibility of trading for Blaine Gabbert. Jay Cutler was always the top guy. They did discuss briefly Colin Kaepernick, but they felt like it wasn't a fit within the culture of the city, and they felt like it wasn't a fit within having to change their offense with a limited number of practices. So it was really Jay Cutler or bust.
We'll get you out of here on this because this could be an infinitely long answer or an extremely short answer. Is Colin Kaepernick going to be on an NFL team at some point during this season?
I believe so. I firmly believe with, injury system shaken out and, the Baltimore situation where they really want him, but the ownership's like, telling them no. I think eventually Baltimore will wear him down in Baltimore, and they won't be able to take the back injury that Flacco has and the interceptions that Ryan Mallett is throwing, and they'll eventually bring in Kaepernick.
Benjamin Albright at Albright NFL on Twitter. You can hear him on AM 1340 and 104.7 FM in Denver. Not only is he going to tell you everything going on with the Broncos, but also just about everything else going around the league. Ben, as always, thank you for the time.
Thanks, bud. Take care.
He just knows a lot of things. He has a lot of things cooking at all times. I think the John Elway situation is pretty interesting because you can't fail at the quarterback position in a very violent way as John Elway appears to be doing, and then continually get the benefit of the doubt for a long time. He's got Super Bowl appearances and a Super Bowl ring that is going to buy him time justifiably. I'm getting the feeling right now, to make this cross-sport, cross-city comparison, that Denver is going to start talking about John Elway kind of like Kansas City has been talking about Dayton Moore these last couple of years, these last couple of off seasons. Does the moves that he made, like, here, tell me who I'm talking about, okay? Tell me who I'm talking about here. The moves that he made to get that championship game appearance and that title, totally worth it. Built a really, really talented roster. Good moves to get to that point. Had a couple of swings and misses, had a couple of big mistakes. Haven't had a team that really looked like an all-around contender since that title. So I'm a little bit nervous about where they go from here. Who was I talking about? All of those things apply for both Dayton Moore and John Elway. I think that's interesting. I think that's kind of I hadn't planned that connection to make in my head, but I just did. Because my mind is moving as fast as my mouth. Zipping around. I got Sonic the Hedgehog on a hamster wheel in here right now. Charlie, you're saddling up to the microphone as if you're going to say something, and you just don't, and this is just,
well,
like,
okay,
it's a pump fake. You're pump faking me.
I am. I like to do that.
Great.
You're comparing Dayton Moore and John Elway.
Yeah.
The only difference I can really see is just John Elway just has a very punchable face, doesn't he? Would you agree?
I would agree.
I mean,
but
that
I
might
also,
just be my like dislike for him.
I think that might just be a bias. I think you could ask.
Dayton looks like he has a very nice face compared to John Elway's.
All right, so Charlie has a crush on Dayton Moore, and he wants to punch John Elway in the face. Good talk. I think the Elway situation is really interesting because he's managed free agency very well. He's managed the cap very well. But he made his bed with the quarterback situation. And by the way, remember, he didn't walk away from paying Brock Osweiler a ton of money. The Texans just offered more. John Elway was about to pay Brock Osweiler. Like, too much money. Brock Osweiler, who's currently, I think, starting week one of the preseason for the Broncos. I'm sorry, for the Browns. Good luck with that. A guy who the Browns literally took from Houston for a price. They got a second round pick to take Brock Osweiler. The Broncos were going to pay Brock Osweiler. They traded up to get Paxton Lynch in a draft where the Cowboys wanted Paxton Lynch and settled for Dak Prescott, in a draft where the Chiefs really liked Paxton Lynch. That's come across my radar several times from several different people. I guess it's for that to be true, that has to be common knowledge, right? I can't be breaking anything in that regard. Matt Verder, I mentioned it yesterday, most recently. The Chiefs like Paxton Lynch. Andy Reid liked Paxton Lynch. And right now, he just looks like a raw guy who's not pulling it together. But I also think what Ben said makes a lot of sense. If you're the Broncos at this point, it feels kind of like you're playing, to me, it feels kind of like you're in year two of Patrick Mahomes, where we're going to be next year. Let me go ahead and I'll go ahead and pivot all the way over. In a worst case scenario, Charlie just grimaced. This is where the Chiefs are going to be next year if Patrick Mahomes doesn't go well, except for more expensive. Because Trevor Siemian's a young, cheap Alex Smith. Like, Trevor Siemian's making like 7th round pick, 6th round pick rookie money. But this is the Broncos quarterback situation is where the Chiefs are going to be next year if Patrick Mahomes doesn't develop. That's what Paxton Lynch did. Now last year Paxton Lynch had a chance to get the starting job. So it's not a perfect comparison, but I think it's in the same genre. Will you give me that? The Chiefs are going to be in the same genre of quarterback problem next year if the Chiefs are unhappy with Patrick Mahomes' development. Because Ben said something very specific about Trevor Siemian that just like hit home for me. So we know what he is. Everyone knows what he is. So play Paxton Lynch. At least find out what you have there. And again, I think that's what we'll be saying about Patrick Mahomes next year. That's what I'll be saying about Patrick Mahomes next year. Because what if it comes out, let's say, first of all, we're going to say the Chiefs don't win the Super Bowl with Alex Smith. I said when I was on BTL, I said, I think it's Mr. Frank Bull, I think he was going to push back on this. I said the Chiefs, I don't see any scenario in which the Chiefs keep Alex Smith as their quarterback next season. And he said, if they win the Super Bowl, they're going to keep him next year. And I said, exactly, he's not going to be the quarterback of this team next season. Unless Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady both get hit by nukes from North Korea. That's the only way that the Chiefs are getting to a Super Bowl this year. Total devastation. And I didn't say if one of those guys gets injured. I said if those two people are both nuked off the face of the earth and the Chiefs are unharmed. That's how the Chiefs make the Super Bowl. They might need that to get to the AFC Championship game. They are going to go to Patrick Mahomes next year. They have to. And I think that's the feeling in Denver right now. And it's how I'll feel next year with Alex Smith. I don't need to see more of Trevor Siemian / Alex Smith. And he also said Alex Smith is a better quarterback than Trevor Siemian is. And that's, I hope that you understand that. I'm saying that I agree. I do not envy the Broncos for having Trevor Siemian. But I'm not going to need to see 2018 Alex Smith to make any decisions about Alex Smith. The Broncos don't need to see 2017 Trevor Siemian to make any decisions about the future of Trevor Siemian. If I was in the Broncos' shoes right now, I would be following what Ben was saying there. Put Paxton Lynch on the field. See what you have. See what he does. Say, listen, this is your football team. You're the quarterback here. We're not even going to reevaluate this until week 8. And then maybe we'll see if it's gone really poorly, then we'll look at, did they draft Chad Kelly from Ole Miss? This is a place where Beards and Charlie as producers really go different directions. They did. They drafted him in the 7th round this year. They really divulged Beards and Charlie. Because I looked at Charlie and I said, did the Broncos draft Chad Kelly? Did they draft Chad Kelly out of Ole Miss? And Charlie kind of gritted his teeth and like to basically say, I don't know. I don't remember. And Beards would have, before I was done punctuating that sentence with a question mark, Beards would have already had the answer. He's very proactive with Googling things like that. It's shocking, but it's true. Sometimes I might, you know how this show is going to end, Charlie? If this show ends while you are running it, because we still don't know if you are doing this consistently, if Beards or neither of you are, and that's fine. But this show is going to end because one of these days, I'm going to see you like reading something off of your computer, just clearly not paying attention, and I'm just going to like mother F into the microphone, and you're not going to hit the dump button because you won't be paying attention, and I'll just be screaming like, Charlie, dump it. Dump it, Charlie, dump it. And we only have a 3.5 second delay here, so our time will be up. And then I will be rightly fired for cursing on air because I got so fed up just trying to see if you were paying attention, just seeing if you were listening.
No, guys.
I wanted to play that for Ben, but Charlie wasn't in the room.
And I highly disagree with most of that you just said about comparing me and Beards, by the way. So,
we won't get into that. We can. It's fine. It's just true, though. I wish he was also here for this. It's just true. He is a fervent Googler of things. I'll say a statement that I'm not completely confident in, then he will let me know 30 seconds later. I will say it with you here, and you will grimace to say, I don't know either.
That's not true, because I will think about it first, because, you know, I have a little bit more knowledge in the NFL, I think, than Beards. But
sure, just whenever you're
then,
like,
and then I'll look it up.
I found it before you did. I just searched Chad Kelly, but I had to stop my train of thought because typing and talking are two separate activities. I was thinking, actually, when I was talking to Ben at one point, I thought, man, this has been a very sportsy show today. We did a full, like, Royals hour, then a bunch of NFL stuff.
You're not off to a good start with your producer, Charlie, here, on your first show working with me.
At this point, like, you've gotten, like, full frontal me. Because we've been working on Sundays together for, like, 6 months. And I have more metaphors that I realize I've had them formulated, and I had them, they were on the tip of my tongue. And then I just went, no, I'd like to get through one full week of this radio show first. What I was going to say, though, is honestly, damn it, Charlie.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I will be here from 4 to 6 every single weekday. Not this week, because Thursday and Friday, there's golf here.
With Joshua Briscoe.
We've already started out by getting, you know, bumped by golf, but that's okay.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me. Yeah.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports. I almost said Sports Sunday because I feel like this gets played a lot on Sports Sunday. Beards also hates playing music with lyrics in it. And I get it. It's kind of hard to listen to. I think I put the instrumental of this in the Car Express, actually, in our other system. But we're here until 6 o'clock. That's how this works. And I want to stress again, how not upset I am about the golf thing. Every time I listen back to that, I go, no, I'm not complaining. It's not like I'm not complaining. I promise I'm not complaining. I have no complaints to give. Also, like, low-key, I'm a little bit grateful because, like, next week I'll be doing 6 consecutive days of radio. I'm not qualified for this. I'm prepared but not qualified. But I've had a wonderful time doing it so far, and I'm excited to get to finish it out today here. Then we move on to Sports Sunday on 810. It'll be the next time that these dulcet tones hit the airwaves. The Atlanta Falcons signed their running back, Devonta Freeman, to a 5-year contract extension. It's a total of $41.25 million, and there are $22 million in guarantees in that contract. I say all of that to drive us towards a larger point. Something from Jason_OTC on Twitter. I'm guessing it's from Over the Cap. So Ladainian Tomlinson signed for $8 million per year back in 2004, which is what Devonta Freeman's going to be making now. So running backs are essentially back at 2004 levels when the cap was around $80 million. What does that mean? Why is that important or interesting? He says for top running backs, in 2004, that was about 10% of your cap. $8 million a year, $80 million cap. Now it's about 5%. That's a little under 5% of your average, your current NFL salary cap. Which is coming in at, what, like 170, something like that? Something in that general ballpark. I think that's really interesting because we've seen this evolution of the running back position. And we've seen it in Kansas City pretty violently. We've had nothing but good running backs here for as long as I've been a Chiefs fan. Was there a dark time at all before Priest Holmes? This is my youth and my ignorance coming at me. I'm trying to think if there were years before Priest Holmes that the Chiefs running back group was not successful. But as far as long as I've been following the Chiefs, Priest Holmes to Larry Johnson to Jamal Charles, there weren't even like missing years in there. They overlapped. Like we all watched Larry Johnson take over for Priest Holmes. We all watched Jamal Charles take over for Larry Johnson. Last year was a dark day. Last year was the worst year at the running back position that I've seen as a Chiefs fan. And so few guys are making even 5% of the salary cap at the running back position because it's just so uncertain. And that's what happened to Jamal Charles. The Chiefs cut him because they weren't going to pay him, actually, I think around $8 million this year. You got something for me, Charlie?
I was just going to say Marcus Allen could be included in that.
Well, what I was thinking was Marcus Allen butted up directly against Priest Holmes? So I'm wondering if there was so I think there was probably a time between Marcus Allen and Priest Holmes where there was a little bit of a dip. But even then, that era of Marcus Allen to Priest Holmes to Larry Johnson, Jamal Charles is unbelievably bright. But we saw this with Jamal Charles. They paid him pretty well, not insanely. In fact, Charlie, go find me Jamal Charles' career earnings, please. Spot track over the cap or something. This segment, I decided to stand up instead of sit down, so I can't Google it myself. Yeah, I am standing and doing radio. I guess I'm an athlete, if you say so. But the Chiefs didn't want to pay him. The Chiefs paid Spencer Ware and Charkandrick West around the same time, so it was noteworthy, but they're not being paid beyond their worth. CJ Spiller is a extremely low cap hit at this point. Kareem Hunt, obviously, third-round rookie. The Chiefs are doing the more responsible thing right now, I think, at the running back position. They have 3, maybe 4 guys, depending on what you're thinking about CJ Spiller, where they're getting all of them extremely cheaply. And then Kareem Hunt, who I think very highly of Kareem Hunt. I've been very impressed by his college tape. I've been impressed by him at training camp, both on the field and behind the podium. I am Team Kareem. But he'll probably play here for, whatever, 3 or 4 years and then go somewhere else. And the Chiefs will draft another guy to fit in this Andy Reid system. Unless he is just a star, then he gets one contract and then is sent somewhere else eventually. Jamal Charles' career earnings?
39.5 with the Chiefs, but if you total, with if you conclude the Broncos, it's just under 41.
I was thinking 35, and a lot of that's going to be speculative. A lot of that, there's some incentives and everything. I was thinking 35 was the number that I had in my head. You said 39? That's... For as good as he was, that's nothing. For as good as he was in this era, that's nothing. All right, Charlie.
Oh, yeah, it seemed low to me.
Here's another thing that this is gonna be harder for you to figure out because I'm not actually telling you what to look up. But find me a receiver who made $40 million in the same general time range, who should not have made as much money as Jamal Charles. I'm trying to think of who would the guy be. I mean, oh God, well, go see how much money Dwayne Bowe made. That was pretty easy, I guess. But I mean, anywhere in the NFL, if you could somehow sort that by career earning numbers, you could eventually figure out that, like, Dante Stallworth made way more money than he should have. Somebody like that. But the Chiefs are now doing a thing where they have four guys on their depth chart that could genuinely be real contributors on this year's team, and also at least two of those guys, Charkendrick West and CJ Spiller. One of those guys probably won't make the team at all. It's a very interesting evolution of football. And last year for the Chiefs, it did not work out. Now, again, this year I've said this over and over again. I think it's going to be Spencer Ware and Kareem Hunt. Spencer Ware, whenever he was healthy last year, was really, if you look back, he was stupendous last year before his hamstring injury, which just slowed him down. And after that, the Chiefs had a really hard time moving the ball in general. It was a really dark spot on an offense that was generally struggling. I think that's going to change this year because Kareem Hunt is a unique talent. His balance, his ability to take a hit and stay on his feet is incredible. I think bringing him in that rotation is only going to make that whole running game better. But the way that the NFL teams value running backs now, I think is really interesting, because you go back to just as far back as Larry Johnson, just sort of that's, you know, one generation removed. He was the first overall pick in your fantasy football draft. You're drafting Sean Alexander and Larry Johnson. Those were the guys that you fantasy football strategies were to go running back. Remember that? Take a running back in the first round, take one again in the second round, then fill out your roster, and you're in good shape. My first year playing fantasy football, I had Sean Alexander and Larry Johnson, and I won the league. In case you were wondering. I generally kind of hate talk about your fantasy team guy, especially whenever it's my dad who will tell me about how his team in the league that I'm the commissioner of is slaying and my team is struggling. That's the worst. You know, then I feel bad beating him because he gets so bad out of shape about it. I don't want his feelings to get hurt by realizing how much better I am at fantasy football than he is. I think I've finished behind him 75% of the seasons.
But I want to join your league just so I can beat you.
That's something I would do. If we got together like a listener league kind of thing, like you, me, and Beards versus the first 7 or 9 people that wanted to hop in on that, do an ESPN draft, whoever was available, that would be great. I would absolutely do that. We need to make sure we come back to that. I'm into the almost entirely sports fantasy league because I think people would just want to beat me. But you would go running back into fantasy football for a long time. You would build a team around that. You would have a feeling about a team's success based off the running back. How many guys in the league are like that right now? Devonta Freeman just got a huge payday. He's at best the second most important weapon on that offense. third, if you're going to make Matt Ryan, obviously Matt Ryan is a more important person on that team. Who else is doing that? Dak Prescott to Ezekiel Elliott? You've got Dez Bryant there. He's more valuable in this year's NFL, right? What did you figure out about salaries, maybe Dwayne Bowe, Charlie?
Well, I looked up the list of career earnings first.
Oh, good. Okay.
And first of all, Larry Fitz is at the top of the list.
Yeah, he made probably
$140 million,
wow.
Almost twice who's second on the list, which is Brandon Marshall. Very surprised.
Is this just receivers?
Yeah, just receivers.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, just receivers. First surprise was Anquan Boldin at four. He's made $65.5 million.
He got a couple of big contracts. He got a big contract in Arizona with Larry Fitzgerald, and then he made a bunch of money afterwards. Okay, that's interesting.
Jeremy Maclin's at 10 with $46.5 million.
And the team that helped him get there doesn't have him anymore. Fantastic. Well done.
But the biggest, I guess, bust or whatever that you would put, that I would put, consider is 18 Victor Cruz, which
that,
is
yeah.
28.4 basically.
So, and that was an injury thing. He had such an electric season and then just couldn't get healthy again. What else is there? What's the worst name that made $40 million, the list that you're looking at? What's the one name who's made somewhere between $39.5 million and like $45 million? You go, oh God, that guy? That guy made $40 million?
Well, I mean, Dez Bryant deserves.
Yeah,
he's at 43 and 8, and then it jumps
too.
And then it jumps down to Jordy Nelson, who's made 36.7.
Okay,
but Pierre Garçon is above Dez Bryant, which is
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
What were Dwayne Bowe's career earnings? Also, are those just active guys? I'm thinking those are all active names, also, because you didn't say anybody who was out of the league at this point. Now I don't know who would have been paid higher than most of those guys because the market for wide receivers has blown up. In recent years. Do you have a Dwayne Bowe number for me? No? Okay. I'm going to see if I can find Dwayne Bowe career earnings. This is good with radio, right? Alternatively, we could probably take a break and then do this during the break. I'm going to find the career earnings for Dwayne Bowe first. Now we're derailed. We're both just Googling things. This is the second. We opened this show. $54 million career earnings, Charlie says. There we go. I feel good about that. I feel good about that call. Dwayne Bowe made $10 million more than Jamaal Charles did in his career. Oof. We're back now to the larger point of running backs. I think at this point, you could probably argue that running backs are undervalued. And maybe we're not going to get a swing back in a way where we go back to the Sean Alexander, Larry Johnson days of having a workhorse back that just runs you through seasons.
Running backs also don't typically last as long as wide receivers.
But that's where this comes from.
Yeah.
Where I think we're going to get, that's exactly where I was going, is I think we're going to get a little bit of a mindset shift back to having slightly more balanced offenses, especially for teams that don't have Aaron Rodgers. You're going to have to win another way. But the Jags should not be trying to... They shouldn't be paying Allen Hurns or whatever. They have two receivers, both named Allen. Allen Robinson, there we go. They shouldn't be paying Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson huge money so Blake Bortles can underthrow them. If you're the Jags, you need to go get yourself a quarterback. Colin Kaepernick's available. What was that? I said Colin Kaepernick's available. Go get yourself a quarterback. Or figure out a different way to win. And I think the Cowboys actually are the best example of that. Dak Prescott is not Aaron Rodgers. Dak Prescott is cheap Alex Smith with a fantastic offensive line and a really good running back, I think. I think that's about right. Better than Alex Smith? Fine, first year Alex Smith. I think it's vaguely interesting. And if I'm wrong... You know, I mean, you probably turned off the station like 10 minutes ago. Whenever we come back, we will wrap up this show, right? We'll wrap up this show. I lost track of how many breaks we took so far of this segment. We will wrap up the show whenever we return. And there are two bits of sound that I'm going to share with you whenever we return. Two things that I forgot about until just now. Probably would have made a better segment than this last one.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Maybe you're hearing these dulcet tones for the first time because your car radio was broken and it just got stuck.
On ESPN Kansas City.
God, I had breaking news that I was going to start this segment with. I'm genuinely very excited about. And I was telling Charlie about it during the break. But he couldn't hear me because he didn't put my microphone in cue. So I made a paper airplane, and I was about to throw it at the glass, and then we came back. I just can't remember what I was saying. I just kept going. Eventually, I just kept going, Charlie, 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 Charlie. Because, and I mentioned this in the first episode, see the sausage being made or whatever. In this studio, the ESPN Kansas City studio, we're in the same building as Sports Radio 810. In fact, we're probably, I mean, like, Kevin is, like, 10 feet behind me right now, 6 feet behind me right now, through a wall. We're right next to each other, but down here, the little button that makes me talk directly to Charlie or Beard whenever he is here, the button makes you talk directly to the producer doesn't work. There's a button on Charlie's end that he has to push so he can hear me whenever my microphone isn't on for the masses. Charlie either forgot that or said, bleep you, talk to your own damn self during the commercial break. I'm paid to keep you on the air, not listen to you read tweets during our commercial.
I'd say a little bit of both.
That's also fair.
Yeah. No, but I'm not used to it. I always forget that.
Yeah, I'm not either, but I thankfully haven't screwed it up yet. The big news, God, I Porky Pigged that. The big news on Twitter is that Stephen Colbert is going to have Anthony Scaramucci on a show on Monday, which is like, oh my God, yes, type of programming. You can't not tune in for that. So just two great people having a conversation that I'm sure will be great. All right, we're running out of time on the show here today, which is not a problem I thought we were going to run into, because I just forgot two really interesting things that I had prepared before the show. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes. Earlier today, on ESPN, what's his name, Charlie? Louis Riddick. God, I was just drowning there. I keep forgetting Louis Riddick's name. Louis Riddick interviewed for the Chiefs GM job, reportedly. I don't know if that was ever confirmed. He was in the conversation for the Chiefs GM job after they fired John Dorsey. But he's on ESPN, and today Louis Riddick was asked a question about Patrick Mahomes. He went on to just discuss the current state of Patrick Mahomes. And I think this is really interesting because it gives you a little bit of a national perspective from someone who really knows this stuff, who really knows the Chiefs, about what's going on right now with Patrick Mahomes.
We're going to transition to a coach that you're familiar with is in Andy Reid.
Yeah.
Surprised a few people on draft night with what they did in the first round. Patrick Mahomes, we may see him Friday night. I'm not sure to what extent here, but it's our first look. What can you tell us about his start in camp? And look at you smiling, because there's a lot of promise.
The kid has people's heads spinning as far as the throws he is making. I'm just telling you, there are people down in Kansas City who are like, literally grabbing themselves around the shoulders going, let's slow down here. Because there's some throws that he is making in 11-on-11, 7-on-7 situations that literally you just stop the film and you go, did he just do that? The same kind of things that you saw at Texas Tech, but people were going, hey, he won't be able to do that in the NFL. You can't get away with that in the NFL. Well, so far, even though it's practice and it's not against a live rush and not against an opponent that's game planning for you, people are going, okay, guys, you know, let's just make sure that we stay calm here.
Right.
Because the tendency then is to kind of rush him into a situation that he's really not ready for.
You don't have to.
That's right.
Yes.
But trust me, the hype is real with this guy. They just have to kind of keep it under control and stay on plan. But when they unveil him, look out.
When you say spinning it, too, it's the arm strength. A little bit different from Alex Smith and what we've seen, right, and going downfield.
There's certain things that certain people can just do in life physically that other people can't, no matter how hard you try, no matter how much sleep you get, no matter what kind of pajamas you wear, no matter what kind of ice cream you eat. And
right.
I'm talking about you, Tom Brady. You're the best ever. But there's certain people that no matter if we did all that, you still can't do what they do. Patrick Mahomes has that kind of ability. He can do things other people can't do, and he's shown it in camp.
Are you not, like, at least a little bit hyped hearing that? Because that's something that I feel like we've spent most of our time here over the last couple of months trying to sort of temper expectations. And I don't really want to do that. I'm happy to help foster the environment of optimism that we can have with Patrick Mahomes. He's got a bunch of tools. And if you heard the sound that I played yesterday of Mahomes talking about Andy Reid's influence on him, if you haven't heard it, you can find the show podcasted. It'll be almost entirely sports. Will be on iTunes all over the place. I tweeted it all out on Twitter at JB Briscoe. You can find all the shows through there. But it's a guy with all of the physical tools, with all of the poise, with all of the intangibles, and with a perfect head coach. Don't tell me not to be excited by that. I'm going to be excited by that. The other topic of conversation we've been having the last few days, I mentioned it with Ben earlier on. Jay Cutler to the Dolphins, Colin Kaepernick, unemployed. And I had a guy I was tweeting with back and forth about how Kaepernick just should have a job. I explained all of this again on Monday. And I'm not going to completely reset my feelings about Colin Kaepernick. But I want you to hear what Keen Fahey said. He was on Dan Lebatard's show yesterday, I believe. Maybe 2 days ago. Doesn't really matter. But I just heard it. I heard it today. And he was talking about Kaepernick's place in the league. In a nutshell, the thing that I said on Monday is I don't even have to talk to you about the content of Kaepernick's protest in the context of the NFL, because the NFL is constantly willing to forego off the field issues. Literally every instance except for Greg Hardy, who had, I think, his girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, tweet out pictures of herself covered in bruises. And there are stories of her, of Greg Hardy throwing her on a bed covered in guns. Greg Hardy is the one instance in the NFL where a guy could still play and wasn't brought back in. And Colin Kaepernick did not do that. So I don't even have to talk about the content beyond saying he wasn't Greg Hardy. You know, the NFL allows people back in. It was Michael Vick went to jail for 2 years and then came back. But so maybe you have questions about Colin Kaepernick as an actual quarterback. Keen Fahey, who does some really fantastic work, especially at quarterback evaluation, had this to say about Colin Kaepernick as a quarterback.
Kaepernick is no better in the pocket than Cutler is. The thing about Kaepernick is early in his career, he was a guy who stared down his first read, who ran out of clean pockets, who relied on his athleticism. And they were fair criticisms at that time, but no one really made those criticisms because he was on a team that was going to Super Bowl or going to AFC or NFC championships and competed in a Super Bowl. And we were talking about him as a generational talent rather than a guy who was kind of flawed, who had a perfect fit. Last year, Kaepernick showed a lot of growth. He showed an ability to move in the pocket subtly, come off his first read in a more timely manner. He picked and chose when to run properly, and he made good decisions. Like, Kaepernick is no longer that guy who was completely reliant on his system. He's played in Jim Harbaugh's offense, he's played in Chip Kelly's offense, and he's played well in both, and they're completely different offenses. So I think, like, because Cutler's skill set is going to age poorly at this stage of his career after a torn labrum, I think you can't really say he's going to be as good as Kaepernick would be.
Keen, help me out here. Try to put a number on this if you can. Kaepernick is better than how many of the quarterbacks who will be starting in the NFL this season?
I won't put a number on it, but what I will say is Andy Dalton is kind of your standard. Andy Dalton has some similar issues to Kaepernick. I would say Kaepernick is more consistent playing to his skill set than Dalton. But Dalton is in that tier where he's guaranteed a starting role. And if all this other stuff off the field wasn't going on, Kaepernick would be guaranteed a starting role. And so he's probably, I would guess, maybe 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st, that kind of range. But that's a big step up compared to, like, the 26, 27, 28, which is why I don't really like going 1 to 32, because it implies the gap between each player is the same, when in reality you've kind of got 14 quarterbacks who are really good and then maybe 22 who are good enough to build an offense around, and then you've got guys like Blake Bortles who are a complete disaster regardless of what you do.
There's Colin Kaepernick's place in the league from a strictly football perspective. And the thing that gets my goat with it, that just bothers me consistently, is it's NFL teams admitting that they are willing to give themselves a worse team on the field because they're afraid of what, like an NBC reporter in training camp? Good God. It's a mark of a fragile franchise. I think eventually I would think he would replace somebody else's injured starting quarterback. But if you're Jacksonville, you have any interest in actually winning? Or if you're Denver, you have any interest in actually winning? You might have already missed your window to bring in Kaepernick and give him any sort of time in your system. You made a mistake. My name is Josh Abrisco. You've been listening to Almost Entirely Sports on ESPN Kansas City. Thank you, Charlie Carlin, for running the show today. We will not be here Thursday or Friday. You can catch me out, though, at 8:10 night at the T-Bones tomorrow night. And we'll be on Sports Sunday this Sunday because it's in the title. And we'll be back again on Monday. We'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening. Bye, Mom.